Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
We've got the show's namesake, BJ Shea, on assignment. He's doing too many busy things of being an important person or board gaming or probably arguing about Resistance or something. I don't know. But we got running the boards, Joey D.
Hey.
On today's show, we will talk about The Expanse, because Joe's watched that.
It's awesome.
There's an interesting new Magic the Gathering game, but it's not what we talked about on Friday. It's a little more like Diablo. We'll talk about the Kong vs. Godzilla trailer, and there's actually even more coming along from the old monster squad from that. Vicky, you've been playing a game that you want to talk about, and of course we got the Geek Sheet with you, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com! Get our blog, podcast, and more! Or just, you know, BJ Shea's Geek Nation, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, radio.com, if you're trying to find us, and find us, because I post lots of memes on the Facebooks and stories.
Yes, exactly. Lots of fun things that are happening, going down. And first, let's start off with the game that you have, because it's a fun, cute little card game.
Actually, this is, if you're in the area, I do very much recommend still supporting your local businesses. Zulu's Board Game Cafe is selling this right now. It is called You Wish. You can also get more information at youwishgames.com. Basically, it's mixing Uno and Go Fish. So two things I love.
Yeah, right?
I actually really love Uno. I know it's not like one of the cool fancy board games or card games or anything, but Uno will always be on my top 5, top 10 list of games of all time.
Easy to learn, lots of fun.
And everyone can play it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone can play it.
But this is actually really, really cool because I love that fact that it plays up to 8 players. You can play 2 to 8 players.
Oh, that's perfect.
Ages 4 and up. The object is for each player to collect and complete as many sets of 4 matching magical creatures as they can. And there are a bunch of fun little characters. You do have like your Cyclops, your dragon, your end fairies and everything. And
nice.
It's really, really adorable. They also have like your ask again card, you know, your draw two cards card. Like one of the turns could be something like, hey, dad, do you have, you know, an end? That kind of a thing. You wish.
So, okay.
Love the fact that they mix two things that we all already know and love and made it something new. Because, you know, like Go Fish, when was the last time you played Go Fish?
It's been decades, literally decades.
I'm with you on that.
Yes.
I've played Uno fairly frequently, though, and recently, I should say.
Uno was one of my favorite games to watch on Twitch because all the streamers bet on it, and it gets really aggressive.
I've seen a lot of people stream Monopoly and get super aggressive with that, too, which is kind of hilarious when streamers are playing that.
Seriously, like Uno, like, this might have to be a game I bring with me because we've gone to radio conventions before.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's times where I'm like, I don't really feel like drinking a whole lot. I just want to sit. I don't want to go to a club or anything during our free time. And I've gotten together a group of radio people, all different walks of life, mind you, ages. And we're playing Uno and the crowd that formed around us because this game lasted 2 hours. We could not get anyone to win.
And the best part about all of that, too, is like you can easily turn a game like this or Uno into a drinking game if everyone's of age and you are down for that sort of thing. Just the you wish could just turn into you drink.
Oh, right. Dude, I've gotten a real big stare going on when I'm thinking about what card to play. I'm like, what color does it need to be this next turn? I just look at them and I'm like, I'm going with red. And they're like, no!
I'm trying to play some poker with that one.
Right?
So let me tell you a little bit how the game works and stuff. So you choose a dealer and you place the direction of play card stack near the center of the table with the direction of play pointing clockwise direction. The dealer then deals out each player 7 cards for 3 to 4 players or 5 cards for each for 5 to 8 players. And the remaining cards are placed in the center of the table and these become the draw pile. So note when you're playing with fewer than 6 people before dealing, remove 2 sets of the 4 matching magical creatures and set them aside out of play. So then the player on the left of the dealer starts. During the player's turn, that player will do 3 things. Ask other players for matching cards, magical cards they themselves are holding until they are told you wish. Then you choose to play an action card if they have one, and then you draw a card from the draw pile at the end of their turn. So the player looking directly at any other player asks them by their name for any specific magical card they themselves are holding. For example, if it's John's turn, he has a mermaid card in his hand. He asks player Jane, Jane, do you have any mermaids? And if Jane is holding any mermaids, she must give John all the mermaid cards she is holding.
All of them.
If John receives the card he requested, John's turn continues and he asks again any player for the magical creature card he is holding. He may choose to ask the same player again for another magical creature card. Oh my God, the amount of viciousness.
Yeah.
That could be done in our group of people.
This seems like a good take that slash press your luck sort of game like that. Even with that, that's funny.
Ray, have you got any dragons?
Go, you wish.
You liar.
Yeah. I like that. You wish.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is also kind of hilarious because a lot of those creatures are things that you like. You catch a fairy, you get a wish. Look, that's what I heard.
Are there any leprechauns?
You wish.
Oh, well, then no gold for me then.
I have no idea.
They're so cute. Yeah, there's a wizard, there's a witch, there's a pretty little unicorn.
So how can people find out about this game?
Youwishgames.com.
Oh, easy.
If you're in the area, definitely please go check out, especially Bothell area, Washington, Zulu's Board Game Cafe. Pick up some food to go because their food specials are ridiculous.
Nice.
They're such good food.
That is awesome. Joe, you've been watching some television.
Heck yeah.
How has The Expanse been going? Now, we're not done with this season yet, right?
No, I believe we're on episode 9 as of this airing.
All right, right on.
Yeah, it's been great. I really enjoyed the first maybe 4 or 5 episodes. We're finally getting into the meat of the politics. The Belters are coming back, finally having their time in the sun, or sort of, maybe other planets. And honestly, like, I kind of got a little bored last season because they spent the whole time on an alien planet, and like the storyline was slow and really didn't do a good job of doing the Game of Thrones thing where they have all the different characters kind of interact their own way and then come together at the end.
Yeah.
Which is what I love most about this show is when you're like, oh my God, they're in like 9 different parts of space. Where are they all going to end up? This one has unfortunately done that in the weird way in the last couple of episodes where at the beginning you're like, oh, this is really cool. I see where they're all going to come together. And then 6, 7, 8, and 9 are all like, hey, we're going to take our sweet time getting all these characters here when really they could have kind of gotten it all happened a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, 1, CGI, incredible. 2, sets, incredible. 3, acting, phenomenal.
Really?
And I'm like, BJ, I love space shows. You know, I could sit in front of a screen and just watch them fly a ship and probably be entertained. So I have been really enjoying this. And I've had a lot of people tell me they've picked up The Expanse from season 1 because of it being on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, and that was, it used to be on Sci-Fi and then moved to Amazon Prime.
Yes, yes.
Right on, yeah.
So, you know, I've been enjoying it. I would say that if you're looking for a good kind of like mix of suspense slash political drama, this is a good show for you. Plus, if you like kind of aliens, you know, that's fun.
And that's kind of the fun part about that as well, because yeah, we've seen Game of Thrones, we've seen the high fantasy sort of thing, but when it gets into that sci-fi-ness of it, it's fun because again, it's familiar. We've seen a lot of space shows, but it's how they take it and it's what their take on it, especially if they have familiar stuff. Like when you're talking about the Belters, they're in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. So like, none of us have been there, obviously, but we know of it just for growing up.
Yeah, and if you were kind of turned off by the whole, like, proto-molecule and the alien part of it, they kind of veer away from that a lot in this last season, which I think is smart because really the dynamic between all the different classes and all the different humans and Martians and Belters is what made this show great, minus the detective story, which they veer away from in season 1 because clearly that's a 1-season thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I would definitely recommend it. And for those of you who don't know what I mean by they kind of weave it like Game of Thrones, generally storytelling, you either follow a main character and then they're in most of the scenes and that's how you do the story, or it's a bunch of main characters and they kind of weave all of their stories together.
Yeah.
That, for me, the second one, money. That's where I like to be.
And you really need to do that when you've got such a, pun intended, expansive universe when it comes to it. When you got people on other planets, you can't always have them communicating or talking. I mean, with like Star Wars, they get away with that with the little holograms and stuff like that along those lines. But when you've got different political parties on different planets, like it's hard to have them come together except for the big like events that are going like necessary for all of that.
Yeah, and you really get a good story that way if you have especially, like I said, those different classes. And you can't really, how is the character going to go and interact with all the different classes if they're not, you know, always there? So.
Yeah, exactly. Joe, you and I have been talking a lot of Magic in the recent weeks, and this isn't anything about Kaldheim, but it looks like Magic the Gathering is going to be coming out with an action RPG very soon called Magic Legends. And if you've ever played something like Diablo, Torchlight, or Path of Exile, you'll kind of know what a fast action RPG is. You'll be, you know, some sort of, especially like, well, with this, you'll be a caster, you'll be a planeswalker. But it's basically what you come down to is the camera's positioned in an isometric top-down angle, and you're going to spend the time gearing up and preparing, going into town, doing your stuff, getting your stuff, getting your spells ready, because this is a Magic the Gathering game. So you're not necessarily going to have a deck, but you're going to have a number of spell slots, which you can use for instants or sorceries. Basically, those are the same thing, but also like summoning creatures and even like stuff like enchantments as well.
Yeah, this game had completely flown under my radar. I don't even know how I hadn't heard about it, but yeah, if you think about it as a dungeon crawler RPG, so similar to the Diablo where you build a character level based equipment base that you get more of over time, and then you essentially do dungeons that spawn randomly generated creatures throughout, you know, different difficulties. It seems really cool.
Yeah, and I love it because, they're using, like, even with a lot of the spells, and you can go check out, we saw this via IGN. They had a whole, like, deck building tutorial and a trailer with it. But you begin by selecting your very own personal planeswalker with three main character-defining choices: your loadout of gear and artifacts, your class, and your deck. And you start off picking a color. So whichever, you know, necromancer is the black mage, the white mage is usually healing and justice, green is going to be a lot of creatures, red are going to be like goblins and sorceries, and blue is going to be like charming and mind magic. And the thing is, though, is once you get beyond that and you start collecting cards, because that's how you get it as you're going around out there, you can then change your deck into however many colors you want. Starting off, you will only be able to do like two colors, but it seems to work well in terms of, like, if you know how magic works, like, they're even talking about how, like, a lot of the colors seem to have some good synergy in terms of, like, necromancy magic, the black magic with the white magic. So you will drain your own life to boost your undead forces, but then you can gain more life by using the healing spells of the white mage. So, and even if you pick like a blue mage later on, you can totally switch colors and suddenly you can make like a red-green deck and be totally fine with that.
Yeah, and I like the idea of gaining new spells with different rarities, similar to where you would in the card game where you maybe your common isn't as powerful as your mythic rare spell, for instance. And then as you go along using it or finding more of it, it levels up. That's a very interesting idea, especially if you think about the way that drops would work in a normal dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
As opposed to rolling, say, an item, you might roll packs or you might roll specific spells.
Yeah.
I like where it's going. I am interested to see if it has a lot of depth, because the big problem with these dungeon crawlers is they run out of content by the time you get to the end game.
Yeah.
So hopefully they have a good idea by it. I mean, Magic has a huge history and a gajillion cards, so.
Yeah, and it's one of the fun things along this line as well is that they're retaining kind of that random aspect of Magic, because you'll have a 12-card deck, quote-unquote, of all the spells that you have accumulated for this loadout. You go out there, but you can only cast four spells at a time, which are, you know, the XYBA buttons. And when you hit a button and you use it, it goes away, and a random card from your deck refreshes in that spot. So you might have like a little like short burst damage spell in your B slot. Well, the next time you see it, it might be in your X slot. So it kind of keeps you on your toes. And that's what Magic does in terms of just like the whatever you randomly get from your decks. Anything could happen at any point in time. They want to try to keep that. So it's kind of neat on that end.
And I think it's multiplayer too. So I mean, this looks like a fun thing. You know, just even if you're only put 20 or 30 hours into it, I mean, you're going to get your time's worth.
Yeah, and there's going to be some monetization on the back end. Not sure how that's going to be going yet, so we don't know what's going on with that. And it looks like it's starting fairly soon, open beta on PC March 23rd. So, I mean, okay, not fairly soon, maybe about, you know, like 2 months, but enough time to watch those videos and think about all your wizard poker shenanigans.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the Dungeon Crawler Diablo series. You know, I played a lot of Diablo 1, 2, and 3. So a Magic-based one intrigues me. I'm very excited to see how this goes.
Yeah. Before we get to the Geek Sheet, just quickly, the Godzilla vs. Kong official trailer has gone out. We got it up on our Facebook page. I thought it looks amazing. I'm very excited for this. And every time I see giant monsters kicking the crap out of each other, it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, I'm all in for this.
This is what I wanted.
Yeah.
One monster versus another monster. We don't need a big storyline or anything. I want Godzilla and Kong fighting. I want Kong throwing right hooks, and I want the Godzilla hyper beam, and I saw both in the trailer. Stoked.
Exactly. Really, really excited to see all of this. And I mean, I think there's even, there's actually a Skull Island animated series that has been announced by Netflix going back to Kong's home. And it looks like it's the same people who made the Castlevania and the Gods one that I ended up watching that I can't remember the name of. Anyway, you can search for it because they're all on Netflix. But it's going to be dealing with all of that stuff. Not a whole lot of details are out on that. So we'll have to see what happens. But basically, Netflix did say a shipwrecked crew, an island of monsters, and one king to rule them all. Skull Island is a new anime series set in Legendary's Monsterverse from Powerhouse Anime, which are the ones that made Blood of Zeus was the one, the other movie, the show. Yeah, I got there. So that'll be excited to see what they do with that because their animation is really great. The movie coming out fairly soon, hopefully this year. I don't know, delays, but I think it's going to be out on HBO Max at the very least.
So oh, yeah.
You can watch it on the theaters, watch it at home, do whatever you want with all of that. But now it is time to get to
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got over there?
So one of my favorite things is fan theories. We all know
Oh,
this.
Yes. It's either that or memes.
Yes. And sometimes fan theories can be memes.
True.
It's a weird cycle. Anywho, my favorite thing is when creators come out and say, oh, no, yeah, that fan theory, you were right.
Really?
And there have been a few instances where that's happened.
There's been a couple, and I can't really think of any like right off the hand, so I'm sure you have a couple.
I have a list. Ranker.com created where you have creators confirming wild fan theories.
All right.
One of them coming from Aladdin, 1992 Disney movie.
Oh, so, wait. I think I know this one.
Go for it.
Okay, that the merchant at the beginning is the genie.
Yes. So,
see, it will not break. It broke.
So one of the directors of the film, Ron Clements, you know, granted the fans' wish, and when he confirmed their hypothesis was true. It's like, that was the whole intention originally. We even had at the end of the movie where he would reveal himself to be the genie, and of course, Robin Williams did do the voice of the peddler. Just through this, through story changes and some editing, we lost the reveal in the end. So that's an urban legend that actually is true.
That's pretty awesome.
That makes sense because it's probably one of those things where you get to the end of the movie and like the feel good kind of gets like lost a little bit because you know you're just doing like kind of a reveal.
Yeah. And I mean, just like they're apparently with one of the Disney movies, they had to go through so many crazy rewrites. The Emperor's New Groove.
Ooh, oh, I love that movie. I do too. It's so underappreciated.
There's a making of it, I think, on Disney Plus. No. It's not on Disney Plus because they never released it like on their wide platforms, but it's on YouTube.
Okay.
That talks about how it was supposed to be more historically accurate.
Yeah, because it's not.
It's not at all. And then they basically had to use the animation they had and work through it to also continue on to make this movie that they wanted to be more hipper for the kids. And I just ended up reading a whole Reddit thread, a whole Reddit wormhole about that thing.
And I mean, it would have been really cool if they did do something that was historically accurate and did have like actors who, you know, were of, I believe they were probably down in like Peru or like their Inca kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
However, Eartha Kitt, David Spade.
Yeah.
And I'm blanking on his name because I kept thinking Joe from Family Guy.
Oh my gosh.
Patrick Warburton?
That one. Like all three. Like
he was also the Tick.
Yes. Like this, a phenomenal cast. Mm. And like also John Goodman.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He's Pacha. Like, oh my God. It's a fantastic movie and it's probably up there in my Disney films.
Llama.
Like, best ones of all time.
Okay. Back to the list.
Anywho. This one is actually fairly recent, having to do with one of our favorite characters, Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
You guys think you know this one?
No.
Well, not so much Spider-Man. Let me
okay,
fix it.
Okay,
Peter
okay.
Parker.
All right.
He's an alien.
So we believe that in the MCU, that the first appearance of Spider-Man was in Spider-Man, or not Spider-Man Homecoming, it was in Civil War.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
What?
Everyone was speculating. So in Iron Man 2, there was a scene with a little boy in the crowd and that's wearing an Iron Man mask, and he's standing up to the rogue robot at the Stark Expo.
Oh, yeah, because it's the big expo where the robot goes nuts at that. Yeah.
And this little boy is like, I have my Iron Man helmet on. I am going to protect everyone. So Tom Holland, who portrays Spider-Man in Spider-Man Homecoming and pretty much in the MCU, everything, confirmed the theory that that was actually Peter Parker. It was back in an interview with Huffington Post back in 2017. Holland said that Kevin Feige, the president of Marvel Studios, told him the young boy is definitely Peter Parker. And, you know, he's really bad at keeping secrets, so we know it's true.
Yeah. And also, I mean, like, some people may have just forgotten about Iron Man 2. Not the worst MCU movie, but not great.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. But that is an awesome moment. Yeah. That definitely fits.
Yeah, 100% on that. And it doesn't redeem the movie, but at the same point, again, fun Easter egg and a way to connect that to the larger MCU universe. That's awesome.
It makes for great memes.
Yep.
Going back, I think I've played a lot of Mario, but I don't think I actually played Super Mario Bros. 3.
Oh,
do you guys?
That's the best Mario game for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Don't at me, people. Like, I know there's plenty of other great ones as well, but it was the standard. It pushed the Nintendo Entertainment System to its limits. It's fantastic.
So the fan theory is that Super Mario Bros. 3 is a stage play. So they think fans of this theory believe the evidence is the scenery. The obstacles appear to be bolted to the background like stage props. And the level ends with the character going off stage to the right. And of course, the entire game starts with a curtain rise.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it totally makes sense in that. I mean, like, because even when you can go behind the scenery in some places and kind of fall down behind it and kind of go. And you're basically backstage when it comes down to it. So all of that absolutely makes sense.
And series creator Shigeru Miyamoto revealed the fan theory was true during a September 2015 Q&A with the UK Nintendo Twitter account, stating the entire experience is just a performance by the characters.
That's actually pretty amazing. And I mean, even like the second game was about like dreaming.
Okay.
But it was actually a game that was called Doki Doki Panic in Japan. Totally different characters. They were just going to do another Mario game, which is what the Super Mario The Lost Levels were, like the super hard one. But then they were just like, I don't think people really want this sort of thing. So they just reskinned Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess into that game and just turned it into that. And that's why it doesn't play like any other Mario game ever.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
This one going back to movies. So there's a scene from the movie The Wolverine that foreshadows the ending of Logan.
The Wolverine
is the samurai one.
Okay.
It wasn't great.
That was the one, Silver Samurai. He goes to Japan. I missed that one.
That movie turns into a giant mech at the end. Things happen.
It had so much potential for being good because the whole Japanese culture and him almost marrying a Japanese woman in the comics. It was a really big thing in the comics, and it had the potential to being something amazing.
Totally.
It just wasn't that great of a movie. But there is a part where one of the characters, she I think could dream the future.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that character.
Yukio. So she tells him that she saw his death. And he says he will die on his back with blood everywhere and says he will be holding his own heart in his hand. And the fan theory contended that this was not a reference to something in that first film, but rather foretelling of how he ultimately dies in Logan. He dies while holding his quote-unquote heart, which is really the hand of his daughter, Laura. Director James Mangold confirmed this was the case directly to a fan on Twitter on March 2017. By the way, I got chills. Oh my God.
And you know what's also
really sweet?
You know what's also interesting? I had to look it up because I'm like, Yukio sounds really familiar. Yukio is the name of the, she didn't have a whole lot of screen time, but in Deadpool 2, the girlfriend of Negasonic.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
It's the same character.
Just different powers?
Yeah, well,
she didn't really have any powers besides the dreaming thing, so she was pretty useless.
Yeah, it's Deadpool, and you don't really get to see any of her powers. She's just there
saying hi. She had like a whip thingy.
Yeah.
Yeah, side note, dreaming the future, not so fun.
No. You become Cassandra, and then it's like, well, people aren't going to believe you, and then it happens, it's like, see?
I'm going to pass on that power.
Yeah. I'm pretty okay with that one as well.
Do you guys play The Legend of Zelda by chance?
I have, absolutely.
So the fan theory, it's like anyone who's played the Legend of Zelda series knows that almost every entry broadly follows the same outline.
Mm-hmm.
So while some argue this means the games are simply just a reimagining of the same story being retold throughout different ages, others suggest that every title links together through a complex timeline. So the theory details how the games take place over three separate timelines that split according to how the ending of each game is resolved. In 2011, Nintendo released the Hyrule Historia, a book that paints a detailed history of the series and the in-game universe. And in it, the full timeline for the franchise was revealed for the first time, officially confirming that there is, in fact, a split timeline.
Oh, so they went a little bit more kind of like Star Trek. When they split the timelines, I was thinking more along the lines of it would be like almost like a multiverse sort of thing.
Okay.
Where there would be, you know, it's just it's Link and Zelda and Ganon mm-hmm. and whomever, Ganondorf and all of those that are just on different planes of existence, and it's just each one accepting, you know, like doing their thing, but that's the one constant.
I mean, we're all doing the multiverse type movies, it seems like, so you might as well either have a multiverse Zelda series.
Yeah, Link enter the Zeldaverse.
Right.
Did you guys see the poster for the series they're creating? I think it's on mm-hmm. Netflix.
No.
Yeah, dude, it's the, oh, I can't remember the actor's name. He played in Game of Thrones. He was the brother that died who was trying to protect one of the Starks.
Oh.
Yeah, the, oh gosh, I can't remember. The crippled boy Stark.
Oh, Brand? Yeah. Brand. No. I know who you're talking about. And it, yeah, it's, I'm just looking it up right now. Is it really? Oh.
Dude, I saw it and immediately the first thing I thought was, I don't know if you can make this a series. Like, what is this going to be about? Is this going to be high fantasy? Is it going to be adventure? Are we going to get him just throwing a boomerang around?
Well, it was a fan poster.
No!
Looks like it's not going to be happening. It's not real?
Oh.
I don't know
they
yet.
Getcha.
I don't know for sure.
Because I heard originally that Netflix did want to do a series with them. Maybe that was just like a,
I remember that too, but who knows if they ever got off the
ground. It looks like, the poster has Courage Is Not Forgotten written on it with the dates 3/3/2021. This poster had fans convinced that the Netflix show was about to drop, but it looks like they're even trying to find
it's
a trailer.
It's the kid from Nanny McPhee.
Aw.
And
yes,
Love Actually?
One of those. Looks like the poster has been just fan made. It was actually first shared on Reddit about a year ago. So I think it's just a little wishful thinking, unfortunately.
Well, I wonder if that means we are going to get a series, though.
Yeah, I don't know yet. It looks like the Wall Street Journal has revealed that there will be a series, and it will be based in the land of Hyrule, but lots of rumors around production. Netflix has not officially announced anything, so right now it just might be a pipe dream.
Ooh.
Okay, so that actor you were thinking of is Thomas Brody Sangster, and fun fact, he's actually going to be appearing in a live-action version of the graphic novel Mouse Guard.
Oh.
Which has the most adorable art. If you've never seen it, I do recommend go checking it out. Also, Andy Serkis, surprise, surprise, he's going to be in it.
Yeah, right. Oh, do you need a CG character? Get Andy.
Yep, we got. Is Andy available? But yeah, no, he was also in Maze Runner, Love Actually, The Queen's Gambit. Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
Oh, he's in The Queen's Gambit. That's right. Yep. That's where I recently saw him. I'm like, that guy looks very familiar.
And like he's like in his 20s or whatever, and he still looks like he's 13.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's adorable.
Poor guy. What else you got, Vicky?
You're adorable. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stop. Okay, no, I gotta stop. So, RoboCop.
All right.
Moving on to this whole, you know, wild fan theories. There's been this fan theory that RoboCop is actually an allegory for the resurrection of Christ.
I was about to say that. Robo-Jesus.
Robo-Jesus.
I don't like this one.
And the director, Paul Verhoeven, also believed, and he confirmed the idea in a 2010 interview with MTV. The point of RoboCop, of course, is a Christ story. It's about a guy who's crucified in the first 50 minutes and then is resurrected in the next 50 minutes. And then it's like the super cop of the world, but is also a Jesus figure as he walks over water at the end.
Does he really? I don't even remember that part.
I might. Huh. I don't know if it's like I haven't seen it, or maybe I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that is, it's definitely a satire on ultra violence and police state stuff like that. So you got to kind of take all that with a grain of salt. Super violent, super gory. And I haven't seen the remake. I refuse to. The original one's still pretty good, and it's got Red from that 70s show as the bad guy.
Okay.
Is that the one where the police guy in the beginning of the movie gets killed, and then he comes back to, like, save his wife or something?
Well, it's the kind of. Like, he gets killed because Detroit is just a hellscape of lawlessness. He gets killed as one of the police officers, and they need somebody. They need a body to be part of the robot, because they found out that basically AI is not going to be perfect when it comes down to it, and you need the humans to be able to do these sort of things. He does come back. He lays down the law. He's very emotionally detached, but there's still the human in him that's kind of like, here's some memories, here's some memories. So you do see flashes of his kid and his wife. And so that's that sort of thing. He's not coming back to save his wife. He's getting some of his humanity back via the memories that he still has.
I can't. I don't think I can watch this now, because I was watching an episode of Bob's Burgers and they kind of parody it a little bit. And it was with, like, Bob's mustache. They needed to rebuild his mustache or something like that. And it was so bad, but it was so good. So that's all I'm thinking about right now. But if you guys want to see these other fan theories that ended up being true, check out our Facebook page. I haven't posted there.
Yeah, I think you should. I don't want to say homework, Vicky, for RoboCop. I think you might enjoy it, though.
I definitely on my list. That and Blade Runner. I've actually never seen Blade Runner. I want to see it all.
Movie night.
Still holds up.
Yep. Except not the director's version. That's the one I need to stay away from.
Yeah, that one's a little confusing, long, and unnecessary.
All right. Homework that I may or may not get to. Yeah, but until next time, stay nerdy.